Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Crypto Sparta podcast. We got a lot, but not a lot to talk about. It's a bit of a crab and it's a bit of a crummy market, but Brian can, as usual, take it off the top in terms of where we're standing.
Yeah, I'm down bad. This past week was not this past week was not kind to me. Bitcoin and Ethereum was kind of just chopping around. A lot of sideways action. Bitcoin has been hovering around like 4,300 or 43,000, and then it kind of dipped to 42,000. So not much happening with Bitcoin and Ethereum. Ethereum was like at 3,300, and then it's like hovering around like 3,100. So those coins have kind of been steady, but a lot of altcoins got hurt. I mean, there was one day on Wednesday last week that, you know, everything was up. But then going into the weekend and then Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is a holiday in the States, just hit hard, especially for the Ohm forks, like an Ohm and like all the Ponzi's.
Yeah, the Ponzi's. I was just saying the memes in terms of like the sentiment. So I feel like the market is just like, how are we feeling? And it was like, there's like the one where it's like, I saw one person where they didn't even give a level where they're just like, if we lose blank, it's lights out. Like everyone's always, we lose 40 or if we lose 30, it's just like, if we lose, and like, they didn't even mention, they're just like.
But it didn't even lose. Didn't even lose anything. Bitcoin basically stayed the same. It was just like basically everything else. Just took 20% hit, like Ohm was down 50%, Time was down 50%, Redacted Cartel was down 50%, Climb was down 76% from all-time highs. So yeah.
One of the things I wanted to talk about was that the idea of like there was a lot of people where the charts, if you set Bitcoin next to the NASDAQ, it was like perfectly mirrored almost. And it recently decoupled, but during the dips, it was like, yeah, stocks dipped, I think, yesterday when the market opened since MLK Day was off. And, I mean, I think the macro is just not looking particularly good. Although they're trying to say different things, it's weird because the Fed is saying, yeah, we're going to do rate hikes. But they're also saying that, like, there's going to be a recovery from COVID. I know that Britain just got rid of the mask mandates and all the whatever crap. So, I mean, in the macro scale, like we had talked about the other time where Bitcoin and crypto is kind of like a high risk thing. So if people are looking to be safe and predicting that all markets are going down, then it's like not a good place to be in.
Yeah, there's a lot of like speculation, uncertainty, especially with like the Fed kind of like not being direct about like, you know, tightening or quantitative tightening or like these rates. So there's a lot of speculation. And I think that's kind of what the market, I mean, crypto is kind of, there's kind of like this holding pattern right now, which can be kind of brutal to experience.
And I mean, it's weird because the catalysts for people have been calling for like, okay, just nuke it and like, let's just get it over with. And on the flip side, it just seems like it hasn't had that big catalyst. And I saw Icebag say like, have you ever felt bullish even though the charts look like crap? Where it's like, it just feels like the world is ready to put COVID behind it. But also there's still like bad inflation that might get worse. There's bad supply chain issues. There's shortages. They're talking about, and yeah, not to bring politics in it, but they're talking about communist crap, like putting price floors and ceilings, like setting prices.
So it's like, for the goods, for the supplies shortages,
yeah.
For
yeah. Again, I can come in with my business school stuff. If you set prices, then that means that you're going to lower the prices below what people actually will pay. So then people start hoarding goods and then reselling it. So
yeah, Not good.
No, I mean, how is it? Is Bearshell's Biden taking care of Minnesota, or in Colombia we got all the fresh rice and beans from the nearby areas?
I honestly haven't seen any empty shelves. I mean, Costco is pretty stocked.
You seen the prices go up?
I mean, that's just in general. I think just general things are more expensive than what they used to be.
I saw some crazy people posting about beef, where it's like they were comparing and it was like double the pound or something. And I think that in general, you know, that hurts retail. Like, there's no new money coming in, really. I still stick to the thesis that overall the crypto market should grow as a whole over time. But yeah, at the moment, where is the money coming from, really?
Yeah, exactly.
Saw somebody being like, everybody who's into Bitcoin needs to have kids so you can shill Bitcoin to your kids.
I can't even put my tax return into, I still haven't even received my tax return from 2020. I'm just not supposed to get that till April. So it's like, where am I going to put extra money into spending or into the economy? But yeah, man, these, I don't know. I haven't noticed, like, I think, I mean, depends on where you are. If you're in a rural area.
I'll say this though. This is the inside scoop, and I don't think that he'd be upset if we say it, but shout out to Gary, our inside man in the meat markets. He's telling me they're getting record profits, and there are some people that can't fill their orders. And he sells to like large chains, and like, I think he sells to prisons as well. But yeah, like, as long as you can fill the orders, but they're talking about...
Well, that creates demand, right? Because if news is saying that there's a shortage, people are going to go to the supplier and say, I want as much as we can have, and they're going to have. So they're going to have like supply.
I saw how Canada is doing some no unvaccinated truck drivers, and like, they're about to get the big dick. Like,
well, there's not even enough truck drivers. Like, they have a shortage.
There already is a shortage. And then truck drivers are one of the least vaccinated professions in like the country.
You can earn like six figures, you know, driving a truck now. Like,
yeah,
if you can drive 13 hours.
They were floating a proposition, I think, in like, of all places, California, or as the Trumpers up north in Minnesota like to say, Commifornia. But they're saying they ran out of truck drivers, and they're testing out having 16-year-olds drive trucks. Jeez. Because of the supply chain issues. It's like, I would say for the market sentiment, we can perhaps move past, or I mean, we can touch on, we mentioned how the ohm Ponzi's are down, but general sentiment or general prices are a bit down, and the macro is not looking pretty.
Yeah, there's very few gainers like this past week. Like, the 7-day of some of the coins that had good 7 days was probably Phantom,
We can mention Phantom. We got to talk about Phantom. And
that was only 10% up.
No, and Looks Rare. I'll just announce it ahead of time. It's my shill. And I moved stuff that I didn't. I probably, it's weird because like, do I say not financial advice, but like, not financial advice, but like, I've overinvested.
Yeah.
But I like just had a trigger impulse where I was just like, look, my investment thesis has always been try to get in early and then wait until you see it go up a bit and like confirm your hypothesis. Like, I'm not buying bottoms. I just don't. Like, I wait until it goes up a bit and I feel that there's a pattern. And typically it works out in a certain amount of ways, but like,
I mean, there's a limit. There's a time limit on that.
Yeah, there is. And then if you flip it, you buy the top. And
because I did that with Time and Ohm. Like, you know, Ohm has been out.
Going up. Okay. Well, okay.
Ohm, yeah. So Ohm was around since July. And so I was watching it. And then I saw it in, you know, September. And so I was like, okay, it's enough time has passed. It's not a rug pull. And so I put money in and it worked out. I, 3X till end of year. And then I was like, this is gonna go on forever. Like I'm gonna the calculator is a blessing and a curse.
It's an interesting question though, because let's just move into the ohm stuff because there's a lot to talk about, and we could have done the pod last night, but I just didn't want to keep people awake here. But the time stuff and the ohm forks, I mean, should we debrief people? You want to debrief people? The idea I wanted to get to though was the philosophical question between ohm and time. But you want to just debrief people, and then I can kind of get into what people were saying of both sides in terms of a new direction or staying the course.
Yeah,
Because.
so okay, so for ohm was like at like $225 like last week, and then and they're in the pat I mean they're still building. The thing about both time and ohm is that things are building. They're different. They're moving into separate directions. Like ohm is still on its reserve currency path. And they're creating this V2 platform for bonding to let other, which is their V2, which allows them to help other people implement their bonding protocols to own their liquidity. And so they were able to finish V2 migration. But for whatever reason, there was a big sell pressure, and a lot of people in the Tetra node pools, the Fuse pools, which allows you to use your ohm as collateral to take out loans. And so a bunch of people got liquidated, just a huge cascade of liquidations. And so it dropped the price like 50%. And it was just like it's just a constant bleed. And same with, time. There was a huge, a lot of people use, if you go on Abracadabra, like the MIM pool to use your, Wrapped MIMO as collateral to get MIM is always empty because all the people use their or get the use their MIMO as collateral and then loop it and to increase their time stamp get MIM buy more MIMO. And so MIMO was going through a kind of liquidity transfer where a lot of majority of the MIMO was on our time was on Trader Joe's, but since Danny,
Started
had
moving to
that
sushi.
proposal to move to SushiSwap, they were migrating a majority of liquidity to SushiSwap, and they're also telling people to wrap the MIMO in order to increase its functionality to use it cross chain, and then maybe that would help it get listed on a tier one exchange.
This was one of the things I was going to interject with about the difference between MIMO and wrapped MIMO. And this is an interesting point to talk about taxes, because the way that the rebasing works is that time wants you to give money, and then some of that money goes into the treasury. And then as the price of time changes, regardless of that, there's a certain chunk of every time purchase that goes into the treasury. And so the way that they encourage you to give them money is through the rewards of the APY. And so if you stake, they're saying you get 60, 70,000 APY, so you're going to keep stacking it up. And then the thing is, the tax man is going to say that every time you do this, it's a taxable event because you're basically receiving something of a certain value. Then when you wrap the MIMO, this is why Brian and I were talking about it. And then MIMO is at like underneath time, which that thing I don't understand particularly. Like MIMO is like $800, but time is at like $1,300. But then wrapped MIMO is at like 7,000 or 6,000.
No, it's so MIMO and time is 1-to-1, but wrapped
Is it
MIMO,
actually? Is
yeah,
it? It
it
is? Because
is.
that's what I thought it should be. I thought it should be.
No, it is, because every time you stake it, it's a 1-to-1 conversion. You get the same amount in MIMO, Wrapped MIMO, there's a little bit of math to it where it's like you times it by like a constant, like which is 4 times.
Are you sure it's a constant? I don't think it's a constant. I think it changes. Or no, it's, it should no, be a
it's,
constant.
It's 4.5 times the index times the price of time. So the index is like if you staked one time at the beginning of the protocol launch, how much time you currently have. I think that's how the index is, you know, check the white paper to, you know, to double check.
Yeah, a lot of people just didn't properly read it. And then this is like where the issue of the
well, there's a lot of FUD too around the wrap MIMO because the wrap MIMO wasn't a function. You couldn't wrap MIMO until like probably, I want to say like December. Like when I first got into time, you couldn't wrap it like really. There wasn't a wrap function. The first opportunity you could do it was if you used it as collateral on Abracadabra to wrap it because you need a constant value. But then I think like once Ohm started to wrap theirs.
They started wrapping it so they could provide collateral and then it became a thing.
Yeah, so...
Right?
But there was a lot of FUD, or just to explain the WMIMO price. So wrap MIMO is at like 58,000 because you multiply, you know, 4.5 times 10 times, you know, 2,000 or whatnot, which is the price of time that equates to the wrap MIMO. And so there's, I don't know if it's FUD or not, because, you know, there are people saying that if you wrapped it earlier, you would have had more wrapped MIMO than, you know, if you wrapped later or if you wrapped now.
And then I'm just speculating and like, I have a feeling that if anybody's listening to us, it's going to sound like garbled, confusing, yeah. But it is really confusing. I think that there's now a separate market for WMIMO.
Well, and that's the trading pair on Sushi.
Yeah. And so it's like decoupled from MIMO. But from what I understand is that as MIMO compounds, the wrapped MIMO, instead of compounding where you get more wrapped MIMO, just the price goes up.
The value increases. So exactly. if you so want to sell. It
doesn't become a taxable event. Yeah, because then you still have just one wrapped MIMO instead of. So hopefully the value goes up and that way you avoid so the taxes instead of getting all these rebases and these interest bearing.
Yeah, so when you unwrap the MIMO, let's say you want to sell. So when you unwrap the MIMO, yeah, so that MIMO amount will be the equivalent to what you earned, like with all the rebases from that time point from when you first wrapped it. Yeah. So if I initially wrapped it, I had, you know, 3 MIMO, and then I unwrap it a year later. I should have significantly more MIMO than I started out with based on the APY.
Yeah. So.
But there's a lot of FUD regarding that with the wrap MIMO situation that caused a lot of sell pressure and then liquidations.
Daniele talked about how everybody should move to wrapping. I just recently wrapped. It's like a marginal amount, honestly.
Yeah,
like
it's just AVAX.
AVAX transactions are like nothing. But I was wondering, do you have to wrap it for the qualifications for the airdrops? And then this is the interesting thing. I listened to the Frog Nation podcast today with Andre Cronje, and dude, they need to like up their production quality. It was bad. It was a Twitter Spaces.
Speaking about production quality, look at us. we can't really talk.
Speaking of that, you can go in on this about the airdrops, and this is like one of the big differences between Ohm and Time, but I need to grab my charger and I need to open these windows. And sorry if there's noise, but it's steaming in here, honestly.
He's in Colombia.
Yeah, Colombia. It's nice out here in La Rochela. But the difference between Ohm and Time is really that it's in Daniele's hands and they're investing
in more.
Yeah, and they're investing in more speculative things. Versus Ohm is, as they say, but I mean, honestly, I feel like when you say Ohm is a reserve currency, that's like a joke where people are like, Bitcoin is a hedge against inflation. It's like, that's also a joke. if it's
a very, it's a simplified, back, it's a simplified, it's like a one word catchphrase to describe Ohm, just, basically.
Well, it's an idea, but the idea in practicality, it's like economists. Like I've known economists and they're dumb. Like they're smart people that apply science to things that have real world implications with multiple variables.
It's basically a bonding protocol, you know, simplicity. Yeah. It's a,
but the thing is, Ohm, their treasury is not the same as what the time treasury does. And so it's like, this is why I wanted to know about, do you need to wrap your MIMO to be able to, this bet swap thing. And then that was big in the Frog Nation podcast. Cause they were an airdrop, and everyone's like, there's all this alpha, there's these smart people. And then it gets to questions. And then, you know, you have Andre Cronje and Daniele Sesta just having to answer when airdrop. But
so,
they did say airdrop. They did say bet swap airdrop.
Yeah, no. So going while Daniel gets his charger, going back a step, like time has kind of pivoted to being like a VC fund, like a DAO that's a VC fund that can invest in you know, different speculative assets. And so they like a couple of weeks ago, they announced that they invested into this BetSwap protocol, which is, you know, online betting or betting on the blockchain. And, you know, a part of that VC deal, it's basically like a terms deal where it's like they got, you know, a portion of tokens at a certain price. So they own, you know, part of, you know, BetSwap GG. And then so going off of that about the airdrop, so they, Sifu in the Discords are like, you've been asking about it. And from what I've seen in Discord or like from other screenshots, like it doesn't matter if you are, I think you definitely have to stake your time. I know that if you're a holder of MIMO or wrapped MIMO, you will get the airdrop, or that's what they said. Or maybe if you hold time too, but I know it doesn't matter whether you wrap it or.
So this is just casual Twitter, and yeah, sorry to interrupt, but yeah, it was just, I just looked on Twitter BetSwap, but I mean, who knows if this is true? The DeFi Edge says 100 million of BetSwap tokens will be airdropped to all time holders soon. Another 400 million has been allocated for stakers. The staking pool is expected to launch late next week. Only wrapped MIMO holders will be allowed to stake.
That's for the stake. So now, so secondary.
400 million of the 100 million.
So there's an airdrop for everyone.
The airdrop is one fifth of the total allocated. So to qualify for staking for the extra 400 million, you need to wrap your MIMO.
Yeah. So that, and that's for additional onboarding of protocols for, cause like in order to stake, you can't have a inflationary asset, right? It needs to be one value to stake. Cause you're like, you're kind of like, nailing it in you're to that spot or like to that value. So you can't have an asset that keeps on increasing in value or increasing in numerical value of like how much you hold. And then they just announced that they, you know, right after all this, like this dip, like they just announced that they invested into an NFT game or like card game. It's called Cross of the Ages, I think. So that's another thing that we're invested in. And it's like, we're basically, somebody tweeted that like, we're basically BlackRock, you know, when it first started, like, it's kind of cool that you're a part of, you know, just by holding MIMO, you have access to all these financial opportunities, like a VC fund.
This is like a weird, interesting shift, because I can tell you about I myself I do have I don't mean to flex, but I do have access to some private deal flows. I would say I technically count as an accredited investor. Well, I might, but I've been seeing things that were similar to Urzel, and then just to like briefly touch on where Urzel's
advertising it too.
Yeah, these reserve funds where they're starting to basically give people access to the types of deals that only private investors would be seeing. And so Time is doing it. There's lots of people doing this, because why not open these types of investment opportunities to retail? And the reason you do the backroom deals is because you want VCs, you want connections, you want to leverage synergies, blah, 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 all that business bullshit. But the interesting thing at the end of the day is Frog Nation. And honestly, I think it's really corny. I'm going to be honest.
I mean, all communities.
All frogs. Yeah,
you
frogs.
Need a, you know, like,
okay,
one of the...
Yeah, Daniela, you just liquidate a lot of people on Abracadabra. Okay,
well, one of the strengths...
You're the king frog, though. Like,
one of the strengths of a coin is its community. Like, that's a factor that you have to, research or factor into your, like... investment is like how strong the community is, or like, because that's like whether you like it or not, like ape together strong, right? So it's
and then that's like, yeah, it just goes to the
so that's like stuff. the whole 3-3 deal
manipulation. Did deep fucking value manipulate markets saying he liked the coin?
It's like a mind, it's a high level like a mind game or a game theory, basically, that we call a Ponzi.
Yeah. And then that was an interesting thing that Andre Cronje had mentioned in the Frog Nation podcast, where he was like, I miss when all this just started because you could experiment. Yeah. And then now it's gotten to a weird thing. I have multiple ideas that I'm kind of trying to flesh out where, on the one hand, it's community, yes. But then on the flip side, it's also leadership and transparency. But then also, like, sometimes you got to cut these guys a break. And it's a weird combo where he's like, look, we used to just mess around. There weren't that many people. And the mistakes did not have the impacts that they have now. And he's like, now, if I make a mistake, or even if I don't make a mistake, and then... just, macro stuff screws my token, I'll have lots of people very mad at me.
Well, now there's more eyes on you.
We've seen it with Ohm. And I mean, it's almost impossible to make a foolproof thing. And the interesting thing was, this is where, I don't know if we're moving on from the Frog Nation and the Ohm stuff and Time.
There's more expectations. But
what they were saying with V33, which is their new product that they're going to launch on Phantom. And honestly, it's weird because it's a little disingenuous. What they're saying is that they've created a new token that is it's supposed to incentivize proper behavior, where instead of doing the curve wars, where, as Brian and I had talked about personally, while we enjoy watching it, I mean, we're just in the peanut gallery. We have nothing to say about the curve wars.
Yeah, we're not big players. We cannot participate.
Just a game for Tetranode and these whales liquidating people. At the end of the day, they always win, but who wins more? And then it's a little fight between these people. And then, yeah, on the Frog Nation, Daniele Sesta was, oh yeah, I lead from the front and this and that happened, and I got liquidated $25 million on Popsicle Finance. Oh, boo-hoo. Did you lose your lunch money? Like, but yeah. What they were saying with V33 is that they wanted to move the incentives from whoever bribes for the curve war stuff wins. And then a small token that isn't traded very much can purchase the liquidity basically with the bribes. What they wanted to do was somehow encourage volume, and that they would be rewarding the pairs and provide liquidity to the pairs that are traded the most, where hopefully the average person ends up winning out. But the way that they structured it is what the 20 top total value locked protocols get an NFT that gets a say in their protocol. So at the end of the day, they're giving. And then also I saw some FUD where I don't know if it's legit or not. And it's really complicated because, like I had said, I'd seen a recent private deal. I'll admit I saw it through my dad, who has Harvard Business School alum friends, where their team allocation of tokens was 25%. And I was like, that's not done in DeFi. But this isn't DeFi. It's CDeFi, again, similar to Urzel stuff and everything. So maybe that makes sense. But they were talking about the allocation for V33 was like 10% to the team. And they were like, okay, how about someone just fork this and give zero to the team? Why not? Because now it's just protocols. It's just technology. And so it's an interesting question where, okay, they're trying to incentivize for the little guy, but they gave power to big people.
Well, you got to pay the people who are building
money for themselves. And are they going to dump and rug on you? There was no vesting period. There's no necessary staking or holding for the initial team.
Well, the problem with, like, you know, creating these protocols is that, like, are getting people to build them is that they don't get paid in dollars. You know, they get paid in it's like you're incentivized to build the program by earning the tokens. So you got to pay them something. So obviously it's like, you got to allocate some to the team. And so that was the thing with Time too, where somebody was tracking Sifu's wallet because apparently he was in the liquidation line for Wrapped Memo. So someone saw that he moved like the team's tokens wallet, which is different than the treasury, actual treasury. And people accused him of taking the treasury from Time to help him to lower his collateral so he wouldn't get liquidated. But he moved the team funds allocated to, you know, basically it's him and Daniel Sesta and like a couple others. So it's like not that much. So,
and it's weird too, because yeah, Daniele was like, yeah, I lead from the front and I got liquidated on Popsicle Finance. It probably was a fraction of his total money and his total holdings.
Well, I think, yeah, I know.
Like a little piece, but it's like also like, okay, are we trusting a fellow ape, another frog? Like, are we trusting this Giga Brain who's like toying around with millions of dollars?
I mean, they're using the protocol. You know, it's like, I think that's a...
Well, he's contributing to the cascade of liquidations at the same time. So it's a question.
Being a victim? By being a victim? Like...
Well, I mean, he's adding risk to the total protocol. That's a safe way of saying it.
But in the grand scheme of things, he is one of the larger people. Like, if you only have 100,000 people using
this protocol. What's the whole thing, dude? What if, like, what's his name? Bill Huang? You know, Tiger Capital.
Yeah, we talked about
the dude who...
He lost, like, $2 billion.
Dude, it was, like, 15. And he was, like, 5x leveraged on, like, dicey, like, Southeast Asian holdings like, in banks and property real estate.
True gambler.
Like,
true gambler.
It's disgusting. And then if you think, I invested with Bill Huang of Tiger Capital, who 5x leveraged, and then apparently from what I had read, he was like taking out loans from different banks without telling them about the other loans. Like, it was interesting where I was talking about it with my dad about the Time stuff and the cascade of liquidations, and then we didn't get to the fair value amount.
Oh, so yeah.
But I was just going to say, for like painting a picture, I assume that most people know about The Big Short. And no offense, yeah, I have an Asian friend, but it was when Steve Carell had that, he was talking with the Asian guy at the casino after they had gone to the conference in Las Vegas for the mortgage brokers. And then the guy was talking about how they repackaged the collateralized debt obligations, where they were like, yeah, we take some of the debt from one CDO and some of the debt from the other that doesn't sell, And then we package them together and we call it CDO squared. And then we sell insurance derivatives against that. And then it cuts to, what's her name? Selena Gomez at a dice table where they're like, okay, those two are playing whatever, blackjack. And then someone is on a hot streak. And then you want to bet on their bet. And then somebody else wants to bet on the bet of the bet. And then you're realizing, like, okay, time is a bet. But the average spot holders are at the whims of these whales who are gambling on derivatives of the spot bet. And so I was explaining to my dad where I was like, you can talk about the fair value of what the actual treasury holds per token to explain the idea. And then I can explain how they took that and loop leveraged. And then there's more money gambling on small price movements and liquidations and leverage than there is in the original protocol.
Yeah. So one of the things of being a reserve currency in the white paper is this idea of a risk-free value where it's like, it's backed by all these assets and, you know, the value of time. There's like, in theory, can't go below the certain value based on that value of the treasury. And so I think for time, so a lot of people misread or misinterpreted that, you know, if it goes below this, you know, value, that the protocol will automatically, you know, trigger buyback. So it will buy back, so it doesn't, to increase the price to that risk-free value. As we found out on Monday, that's not what happened. And so during that time, or during Monday, it dropped from like 2,000 all the way down to, you know, the risk-free value of time was like 1,300. It actually went down below to 900 or 700. So it went below the risk-free. So a lot of people, you know, use abracadabra and, you know, use their MIMO and calculate their leverage accordingly so that their liquidation price would be the risk-free value, like 1300, for example, thinking that it would never go below that value. And
it's
so
the bottom is like a titch above 800.
Yeah. So people like did that. And then, so it actually went below that and they got liquidated because of that miscalculation. As we found out on Monday, it's a manual process that they have a backstop in place to, so like there's a confusing between backstop and risk-free value. Right.
And but people were like putting up like the dictionary.com definition of a backstop.
Like, yeah. Like, so to $1. yeah. So they actually did buy back, but
they
it was
did,
below.
They did buy back. And I'd say the interesting thing about this is like I relate it to business with the idea of stock buybacks. And then at the end of the day, that's also what time wants to do, is to be able to own their own treasury. If they own their own coins and then they can decrease the value. It's similar with like the burn of abracadabra and spell. But the crazy thing was all of these people were getting liquidated and asking them when buyback. And like, this is where the FUD, and then like some people probably sold, and it's like some people probably sold the bottom. It wasn't even all liquidations, but you're
just a spot holder
like Brian and I, and then the price is crashing and you're like, the fuck is going on? And then you got to realize that there's gamblers out there, and this is the entire crypto market where you realize
fucking up my bag,
small boat on the ocean, and there are whales that are jumping up and down and sinking and dying and eating each other. And you're just a tiny little boat on the ocean. Like,
and considering how crypto globally is kind of like a small ecosystem. Like time only has like 600,000 holders in the world. So if you have like, you know, people like me, you know, if a majority of those people are, you know, investing like small amounts, like $1,000 or less, and then you have like the few 100 guys or maybe 1,000 of them who are whales who actually are like really smart and know how to game the system.
And they can just play with your emotions.
Yeah, exactly.
They can just press
fucking
sell.
Up my bag.
I believe there was like a, I don't know what the number, I'm not gonna lie because I forgot what it was, but there was like some wallet that like sold to push the price down and bought up like 40% down or 30% down.
Yeah, they'll sell at a loss just so they can buy it back at a lower price, and that net,
and then they just totally messed.
Yeah,
and they saw where the liquidations were on the chain. That's the thing about blockchain, where it's like there's no bullshitting anybody. You can see who took out how many loans at what price.
Exactly. And so that's the bad thing. If it was automated, if there was an automated buyback, people could gamify that, you know, the whales could gamify that risk-free value and just play with that line.
And I was one of the people saying, don't touch the treasury. The treasury is what is meant to be used to invest and then to get more returns. And so then this is where in business, if you have a business, you want to use your money to invest in your business to be able to make more money. If you earn money, but you don't want to spend it, there's a problem of overcapitalization and not having a proper use of your capital. You don't want to just leave dollars sitting around. So you either put it in a bank for interest, but interest is crap, or you invest in your business. But this is what happened, not to get really deep into the PPP stuff. And like the US gave out these bailout loans to all these big businesses. You know, these big businesses already had their capital expenses planned. They didn't need extra cash. And then you can't just sit on this cash. So they did stock buybacks. But unlike a traditional business, Wonderland is an investment company, and you don't want them spending money to make the stock price or the token price go up, because then the whales will see that and then they will sell. So the money going from the treasury to pump the price will
then kind of showing your hand.
Exactly. And then the whales will sell, the price will stabilize again. And if there's a set limit, every time the treasury purchases to make it go up, the whales will sell to make it go down. And then they will hit that line
force you
over and over and over again until they drain the treasury. And so I was one of the people that said no buybacks. I was thinking, but what is my vote worth?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. But yeah, so
that was... I mean, all these people were expecting it to stay at the fair value.
Yeah.
They got
screwed. Well, now we know it's not theory anymore. Like we know what actually happens.
And I
feel bad
you,
for the guinea pigs.
They talked about the buybacks and they talked about the manual buybacks, but in the white paper they said that the buyback value is that they won't let it go below one DAI.
Yeah. That's the backstop.
So the $1 billion is to make sure it doesn't go below a dollar. Not the value of token to the treasury.
Yeah. So they're saying, you know, there's a lot of fudsters saying, I know Jordy Alexander, who's on Up Only, like he was like, told you so, knew these things were Ponzi's. But if you like look in the grand scheme of things, like Ohm and Time are building, like they're stronger than they were when the price was high. Like,
this is the point that I wanted to get to in between the difference and then also some of the philosophical things. I believe it was Daniele Sesta who said, okay, we're going to change the model. We've raised enough funds. These rebasing tokens come at the idea that we're going to give you rewards for holding, but you give us money up front and then we'll invest that money. And then that money will increase in value because we're going to invest it in yield bearing assets. And I saw someone say, this is basically MCC, and then all these tokens are turning into random slush funds for whatever team to invest in whatever they want. MCC is multi-chain capital on Ethereum. There's also cross-chain capital. It's farming as a service. It's just investing in one place or another. You can be with Daniele Sesta investing in whatever he believes in, or you can invest in farming as a service with the teams of multi-chain capital or cross-chain capital. At the end of the day, you're getting slush funds, and then the mechanism for rewarding people changes. And so the rebasing token, Daniele is saying, look, we did the rebasing model. It gets manipulated by whales. So we're done with it. And we're going to stop giving rewards, and everybody just has their token. The token is what it's worth. We have the treasury, and then we'll reward the people that are holders, not with rebases and increased amount of tokens that leads to dilution, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. But we will reward them with airdrops in terms of what we invest in. And then multi-chain capital, I believe they reward with whatever they call reflections. But at the end of the day,
isn't MCC investing in all the Ponzi's anyways? Like, I thought that was the whole point of MCC.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. At the end of the day, it's all Ponzi, but it's not Ponzi.
They're investing all the Ohm forks.
You can go to your Ponzi definition where it's like, okay, yeah. Are these things Ponzi's? Is it a Ponzi to give money to a token that invests in other things? That's not a Ponzi. A Ponzi is an actual scam.
Yeah. So,
but some of these scams, that's a different question.
So I retract. So instead of Ponzi, I should say Ohm forks, because they were like investing in all the Ohm forks and then, you know, spitting out a value token that people just sold. But yeah, so Jake Chervinsky, you know, tweeted, you know, you're using the term Ponzi to mean an economic game with built-in investing incentives and a high risk of implosion. So basically a high stakes, you know, economic game theory, basically. When regulators hear Ponzi, they think it means fraudulent scheme in which criminal deceives victims to steal their money. Like, there's no money being stolen. Like, you're, at the end of the day, you chose to invest. Like, you know, you are the owner of your own bags. And so you own your decision to invest. And so,
well, and I would say the interesting thing at the end of the day with the game theory of this is that, okay, go to the OG Bernie Madoff Ponzi schemer.
Yeah.
We're putting our money in. Bernie takes it out.
Well, he took out $55 billion. So we're like, if the treasury is worth $1 billion, we're a long way to go from reaching Bernie status.
The idea is, though, the real thing is, are these teams transparent with the supply and with where the tokens are allocated and who has them? So if you already know and it's transparent that they have 10% of the tokens, or 50% or 90% of the tokens, and that there's a risk of them dumping on you, but they don't do anything illegal where they increase the tokens and then they give them to themselves and then they change the rules. But some people do this. People are changing the rules in the middle of the game with a lot of these tokens.
I mean, that's, you know, the risk with meme coins. Like, they can just change the roadmap. Exactly.
That this one allocation was secretly, or someone is allocated tokens they're not supposed to dump and then they dump them. Exactly. You got what I was getting at. But the idea of, are these Ponzi's or not? I mean, it's a bit arbitrary, and you're talking about high risk. Daniele Sesta is putting in lots of money that you've given him to invest into a gambling platform. It's almost ironic that you're actually investing in gambling.
No, I mean, the thing about crypto, it's a game, basically. It's a high risk game with high stakes. And so anything could happen. So, like, you know, like, who would have thunk that, you know, the CTO of a company goes on a bender and then sells 7 million, you know, of your tokens when the fundamentals have been good. Like,
Daniele Sesta, Tetranode, you know, these people that Sam Bankman-Fried or Arthur Hayes back in the day, these people understand how to play people's sentiments. Suzu dumping on you, Three Arrows Capital. If you're like, oh, dude, there's some really sweet rewards on this one farm. And then a whale comes in, takes all the rewards and dumps on you. It's like, oh, man, I got three times as many tokens that are worth a fraction of what they started as.
Got more tokens, but they're worth less.
And that's exactly what's happening with Taiman. I mean, when Daniele Sesta is providing the platform for people to leverage, and then they can see all of the statistics. They probably have giga brain traders that's what they were saying, is that the Tabasco, Sam
Alameda, or yeah. Sam, it's Tabasco. Trabuco, yeah.
Everybody calls him Tabasco. Tabasco. He's like, we see how much powder we have, and if we can trigger a cascade liquidation, we definitely will. And then these whales can just dump and just liquid cascade. And the problem is, it's crypto. And I mean, I'm not like this. I don't know if it's a problem. Some people get rich off leverage. Some people like it. But I think it's a small fraction that profit off of a lot of dumb
idiots. Yeah, you got to know what you're doing if you're doing leverage.
Did you see KSI's tweet?
What did he tweet?
He tweeted about Binance. He said, Binance, can I get
He's on the leaderboard, and his like P&L is like negative 20 million or something.
It's negative 5 in the last year, but they said he lost more last year. And he's like, just don't play with leverage. You always end up losing.
Yeah, he's like,
it was like one day, like down like 8,000.
$3,000. Yeah.
And so then it got like, to 5 million in the last year.
It was funny because it's like they have a leaderboard, which is like you can compare yourself to like the top traders. And then it ranks him, and he's like just down horrendous. Daily negative 3,000.
Something like, yeah.
Seven days is negative 81,000. Last 30 days, like negative 450,000. Last 12 months, 5 million. Like,
yeah. These people, they know how to just sweep the rug. And honestly, that is what I was going to say, is that there are so many people in crypto that use way too much leverage when they don't and shouldn't. Like, they don't know how to.
If there wasn't leverage, like,
there's whale. The order book is open. It probably is pretty easy for FTX or for Binance, for CZ, to just like be like, okay, if I sell everything I have right now, millions of dollars will probably, maybe a couple billion will disappear.
Well, you saw. So I got tweet notifications for the MIM replenishes on the Abracadabra pool. I just kept on getting, when that liquid cascade, I got constant back-to-back notifications that the wrapped MIMO pool got replenished with, like, you know, it got, first it was small, like 6 million, then it was 20 million, and then it was like 50 million all within a span of like 30 minutes. So it's like, once you get those notifications, you're like, oh shit, people got fucked. And so, like, yeah, what do you think, like, you know, if people, like, join together and say, we're not going to use leverage, like, and just spot hold, like.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
You think, people, like.
People will take out loans. It's the whole basis of DeFi, the idea that anyone has access to liquidity, anyone can take out loans. It's, like, impossible. Someone will do a backroom deal. There will always be someone looking
for a loan. Human nature.
Yeah.
And then if you have, like, you know, if you ask for regulation to, like, ban leverage, you're like, you know, freedom. So it's like, yeah, don't do leverage.
Yeah.
Do you want to pivot? Mean,
yeah, yeah. Should we do,
NFT update? Yeah. And then do our shills and then call it?
I didn't see much about NFTs, but I did see the Jake Paul Sneaky Vampire Honorary that looked kind of fresh.
Well, do you want to talk about Simpin to Earn?
Oh yeah.
So there's a brand new business model called Simp to Earn for these e-girls out here. We all know this is a prevalent toxic problem in the crypto space where e-girls are taking advantage of virgin white males, preying on them to send them crypto. And so Irene Zhao, she's like, actually, she holds like crypto. She was like CFO or CSO for like Konami Network. I don't know what that is, but
a model.
No, she was actually like a C-suite executive for like Konami Network. Like, I'll pull it up. Well, anyways, she started her own like social capital kind of fund for DeFi. Very attractive looking. I think she's from Singapore. So she's creating this creator economy called Soko, but she was a Konami Network. Now she says she's advising, so she must have left. But she created her own DAO or NFT collection, or somebody created it, and then she partnered with them, where it's just basically a simp pass, or like proof of simp. Yeah, NFT that you are a simping for Irene Zhao. So it's basically, they call it a tribe pass as an NFT. And I think they were free to mint, but the floor kept rising. It got up to like 5 ETH. And Logan Paul bought,
money at 6 ETH.
At 3 ETH, 2.85. He put like 200,000. He bought the top. He bought the top, and so he put in like over 200,000 into it. I'm gonna see what the floor is at now. And they're not even well named or well made like NFTs. It's basically like a copy pasta. Floor is still at 1 ETH, surprisingly, like 2,200 ETH.
Kind of gross.
Traded. So this is like. People like purists of the DeFi space just like shake my head. This is cringe.
Send it to zero. And every day we step further from God.
Yeah, and they're not even well made. Copy pasta jobs. Like there's all these like air like white spaces in between the DAOs or between the outlines of it. And I'm sure they just took her Instagram and then. Took the photos and then put crypto stuff. But it's funny that, who put it, or CL was like, this is the simp to flow model of making money. And then, so a lot of people.
They started popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
And I guess
Mia Khalifa.
DAO, because all of these, they look like NFT projects, but they're all called DAOs. And the Marin,
they call it a tribe pass.
Five of them, like you get something to be in on. Like, do you get like some rights as an NFT holder or something?
It's DAO to. So Irene DAO is like Web3 social media thing. So passes a future
word salad of bullshit.
Yeah, just like could be a project. But the thing is, And like all these well-known people, like blue check marks, bought into it. And it was funny. Kobe got sent one by a listener, and then someone made an offer on it. And then he was like, I don't even know how I got this. I didn't mint this. And someone wants 3 ETH for it. And then the guy who sent it to him, it's a funny video where he's like, I made a mistake. Like, I thought,
please get it back. Can I get the 3 ETH?
Yeah, like I promised the simp. Like, he was like, I wanted to cleanse my simping, so I'm giving away my Irene DAO to Kobe. Yeah. And he's like, I need it back. Like, this is worth more than my car. I promised to be a good simp and you know, Semper Irene.
No, and I heard the rumors that the guy behind it was Beanie. And Beanie, I mean, he just got brutalized, where people are just saying he's like just a really bad NFT dude that scams people. And it is crazy how like there's verifiable proof that like people at the top of some of these NFT projects are like serial scam artists.
Well, and they're on the other side, there are serial detectives that want to get a kick out of like exposing people, which like you need those people in the crypto space. But it was funny too, there was like a Mia Khalifa DAO coming out. You know, the PH Irene DAO, like, you know, the...
Oh, yeah, the backwards. Flipped. I saw someone post where they were like, so what's going on? Like, flipped Irene NFTs. He's like,
called it PH. And then there was like, someone like did a, like the collection is called Irene NFT Scam Collection. And it's basically... nude bodies, but copy paste her head, and then like just covered her tits with Bitcoin symbol.
I heard that there was a collab. What's the dude's name? Like the East Asian guy, who like I want to say Gorgonzola. I don't want to be rude. He's got like the guy who took a photo of himself like all the time. Do you see that guy?
No, I don't know what.
His also got like very famous.
He made his own like DAO collection similar to Irene DAO.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're a very attractive girl and
Gozali. He's a 22-year-old Indonesian dude, and he's just a random dude that started posting NFTs of himself and it blew up. And there's a crossover now with Irene.
What's his Twitter?
Sultan Gustaf Al Ghazali has made the most of it, churning out over $1 million by selling NFTs. And they're just photos of this one random dude from Indonesia. And they just kind of like became a thing. And now he's like, I think he's collaborating with like maybe Mia Khalifa or Irene. Like,
well, there's a rumor. I don't know if it's true or not, that, you know, Irene didn't even like create the DAO. She just partnered like
that's what I heard, and yeah, that was the whole
55 year old guy
behind it. Yeah, it was like some, yeah, it's like, oh, she's actually a dude, like, can't believe you're giving money to the dude. It's like, dude, of course this chick doesn't actually like care about crypto. It's definitely some random
money grab.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was like very crazy how you know, that just you know, contributes to the meme of like, you know, the girl, the hot girl meme, like with the mask, with the guy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if you're a very attractive Instagram model looking to get into the crypto space, one way to do this is to manipulate simps, simp to earn.
Yeah.
But that was the NFT news.
Head to the shills.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I'll just go for it. Looks rare.
Yeah, looks. You talked. I didn't even qualify for the airdrop. Michael, our buddy Michael, in the CryptoSpire chat, saying it was worthwhile to get better than the SOS airdrop.
It was worth it for me. I got 125, and it's at $6 now. So
I didn't. You had to trade 3 ETH, you know, to qualify in OpenSea.
Yeah,
and I didn't trade that much. But apparently there's staking rewards or staking.
I can look them up right now because I have it up on my 755.59%. It's going down. More and more people are staking. Yeah. Oh, it includes both looks and wrapped ETH that are included. And so not only do you earn the native coin for the platform that's competing with OpenSea, but you also get a portion of the wrapped Ethereum that's being spent on NFTs on the platform. And so all the stuff, OpenSea is making billions now.
Yeah, and OpenSea is like becoming the boomer.
Everybody's pissed at OpenSea. I mean, they take
They're going the ICO route or the stock market.
They were down today. Like, dude, you're making billions. Get servers.
I don't think they launched though. I don't know if they launched on the stock.
They're not doing an ICO.
They're doing an IPO. Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing an IPO. They're going like traditional route.
Yeah, normie route. Yeah. So that's why they're getting a lot of flack from the crypto space. And that's why you see Looks Rare coming out, which is basically, you know, trading NFTs on the blockchain, more decentralized. And yeah, so people are like, OpenSea is for boomers now. It's not what the cool kids are doing.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm trying to check, and there was this one tweet where it was like, somebody got like a decent chunk of Looks Rare as like an airdrop, and then they just bought in even harder and staked it, and then they made like a shit ton off of it.
Yeah, that I didn't even think about just buying on open market.
Right?
Because
it went up since the airdrop, so it's like,
yeah, I wonder where you can get it. Is it just on Uniswap?
Yeah. And it's only on Uniswap. That's the only platform that has any liquidity for it. But I was going to say, I'm looking through for that one tweet that I don't know if I'll find it though, but the other ones are Strong and Thor. It looks like Thor is legit. I don't know, because Ring was another node on BSC, but
Thor's on Avalanche. I think Strong is pretty is not, I mean, it's pretty legitimized now.
Which one? Strong?
Strong. I think that's the OG one. And now they're doing Polygon nodes, but those decay. But you can make nodes on Polygon now, and they're going to do cross-chain. But like Strong has, I mean, for how long Strong has been, it's been around for a while in crypto terms, and it's still like market cap wise, it's only 115 million like market cap. And people,
I got the tweet, and it's actually ironically, so I'll give some my three shills, because this is from Mooncat 2878, and I bought my Mooncat at 0.3, sold it at 1. I got my dad to buy a Mooncat at 1. It dropped to 0.5, but it's back to 1. I'm showing Mooncats as well. Shout out to Mooncats. But Mooncat 2878 said, 9 days ago, I invested 142 ETH into Looks Rare for 136,000 looks and got 12,000 looks through the airdrop. So far, I earned 19,950 looks, which is 38 ETH, and 22 wrapped ETH, which is 60 ETH total in rewards. So for 142 ETH, plus the 12,000 airdrop, which is negligible, for 142 ETH, they've earned 60 ETH in 9 days. So 60 ETH into 142.
That also signifies how ETH is for the rich people too.
Yeah. But then the crazy thing is that these rewards should compound.
Yeah.
Because now they have more looks that will increase the amount of rewards, which is compounding. So 200 ETH profit in 9 days.
That's crazy. Just looking at the APY, so our APR.
Also, yeah, that's not even talking about the value of the looks increasing.
So you looks get, yeah. So current looks APR is 320%. And then the current wrapped ETH APR is 432%. So that's crazy for wrapped ETH. And so that combines into 152 APR.
And I mean, they're saying that they're developing new things. They look like they have a solid development team. Their Twitter is responsive. So there are people saying, I saw someone be like, hey, I would like to be able to delist multiple NFTs at once. And the team was like, for sure, we'll get on it. And like, meanwhile, OpenSea people are like, yo, dude, like, I got my thing stolen. Like, yo, you're down. And then they have like some automated bot.
Yeah. Did you hear about the Tetranode up only, how that JPEG'd, the company called JPEG'd, like that platform, you're able to lend or use your CryptoPunk as liquidity to get dollars.
Yeah. I didn't hear that part, but I had heard about JPEG. Yeah.
So that was part of his 10 rings.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So my show is pretty, I mean, Daniel showed us a bunch, but I think this is like the time. I think
Phantom. Phantom,
yeah. I think we especially.
Didn't even get the network. We didn't even get really deep into all the. It's the DeFi. I don't mean to steal it, but the rewards and some of the things.
It's where the farming it's, opportunities. It's like a it's DeFi like, paradise.
Yeah,
it's a farmer's like, paradise.
Yeah, it's like boring. It's not like something new or innovative. There's just good numbers.
It's just constant too, and there's plentiful. It's like people talk about like you know, going to. Like America or like US or like dreaming of like a better place. Like this is like a farmer's paradise for, you know, yield farming and LP pools, where you, if you can figure out like the thing Daniel said last time, where it's like you have to get like coins that are hard to get, like, and Phantom takes a while to get, or like is one of the qualifies as that, because it's not you can buy it on Binance right now, actually. They just listed on US, but it's not on Coinbase. No one, I mean, like, nor are, if I was, I don't trust Binance, so I'm not going to use Binance. The only way for me to get it is FTM, or I don't know, KuCoin.
Yeah, and Phantom on Binance, they, like, limited withdrawals. Like, it was super shady.
Yeah, they like, capped
it. People's coins, and then it's like, the question is, wait. If you're not letting me withdraw my coins, do you even have them?
Like, yeah, so they're probably using
my dollars and not have Phantom backing it and tell me on paper that I have them. Like,
so if you like look at, so CoinGecko has like a Phantom ecosystem of coins. And so like BadgerDAO or like, you know, a bunch of those, you know, are just like up. Are just green the past 7 days.
I saw someone post a Phantom, because I follow a decent amount of Phantom people, and then like if it pops off, I see Phantom updates. LQDR,
yeah.
Beethoven or whatever, Liquid Driver.
Yeah,
I do. Tomb. But this is a complicated thing, and I'll say it quickly. But it wasn't particularly the easiest thing. It takes getting the hang of crypto, but okay. So I took my Phantom. I had to move it from my old Phantom wallet to a new wallet. I had to add on MetaMask, the Phantom network. And then with my Phantom, I had to buy Tomb on their decentralized exchange, Spooky Swap. I needed to balance my Phantom with Tomb. And then I minted the liquidity pool token of Phantom Tomb. And then I staked Phantom Tomb to Tomb.finance in the cemetery for additional Tomb share. These things sound ridiculous. Honestly, the names are silly. Like,
yeah.
Tomb share into the cemetery to get T-bonds. And it's
if we're actually like
a Halloween theme, and I'm like, this is kind of corny for something with serious money behind it.
Yeah. Actually putting real money into it. But like the thing is though too, if we're gonna have this chop for a while, like it's worth learning how to farm.
The farming stuff is really the deepest, and you're right. It's just hard because Phantom does very limited marketing. All they've done is sponsor Pierre Gasly and F1.
Well, technically, it's like a non-profit like foundation, right?
Yeah, like, and it's like
their official Twitter is the Phantom Foundation.
And Andre Cronje, I mean, I'd heard him on the Frog Nation thing, and he's just like, yeah, I'm a developer, but I do have vision. And then Daniele Sesta was like, he's one of the rare dudes who has good ideas, but also knows the technical stuff. The dude just, and I mean, the transactions, AVAX slowed down hard when time was crashing.
Yeah, it still has like the scalability issues of ETH. Like, it's
Phantom
just
is one of the most scalable. They do so many transactions at less than a penny. and it like doesn't slow down. And I mean,
so that makes farming like giving you better or incentive to try new things is because things are cheap, so you can like afford to make a mistake on like a transaction or so.
A lot of NFT stuff out there that a noob could even speak to too.
Yeah, so Phantom's my, I mean, it's been really strong this Q1 so far. Yeah. And so it's been hovering around, it was touching like all-time highs, like 340, but it dropped down to like under 3. So, I mean, I'm looking to buy under 3.
I think under 3, and it's just hovering around, and it's like, it's almost the flip side of ETH, where ETH is like teasing with below 3, and Phantom's teasing with above. Like, it just feels like,
non-financial advice, but that's what I'm looking for. But yeah, on that note, I think we've had a good
podcast. We did a longer one than normal. It was a good one.
Yeah, it's shit markets, but you know, not a dull week in crypto. I made this joke earlier, Eric, to my uncle, where it's like I'm losing money, but I'm still having fun. I'm having fun losing money. So. So that's it for this episode on the Crypto Spartak podcast.
Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Peace.